All right, let's talk about feeling our best without the hassle. You know those wellness trends that sound great but are impossible to stick with? Like taking apple cider vinegar shots. Yeah, no thanks. That's why I love Goalie Nutrition. They make wellness simple, delicious, and effective with their chewable gummies packed with powerful ingredients. Apple cider vinegar has been used for centuries as a traditional remedy for digestion and gut health. And Goalie's apple cider vinegar gummies make it easy to add to your routine. And when life gets stressful, the Ashwagandha gummies help me stay cool, calm, and collected. No wonder they're Goalie's number one bestseller. Plus, all Goalie gummies are vegan, gluten-free, and made with high-quality ingredients you can trust. Join millions of happy customers and see why Goalie is the number one most sold item in U.S. retail across all vitamins, minerals, and supplements. Goalie is changing the wellness game. Head to Goalie.com now and get America's number one ashwagandha and apple cider vinegar gummies at an exclusive 42% off. Give them a try risk-free, backed by our money-back guarantee. Don't wait. Visit Goalie.com today.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings wrestling podcast on the Social Suplex Network. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
How's everybody doing this week?
Not good. Not thriving. Not thriving.
I like that we've been, on this call for like 10 minutes and it felt like you were like keeping that all bottled up for us.
Finally, someone's asked me how I am.
You want to talk about your troubles, Leah?
No, it's just like, do you guys ever have like at the beginning of the day, you have to count, like you count how many things you have to do in order to get through the day. And today it was just so many. There was just so many things that I had to do. And then I had places I had to put my body. It was just like a whole thing. I was just long. Yeah. Long.
I understand that feeling very well. I will say my kind of related trouble is that I was thinking about how easily my house becomes repulsive. Like, it's like you can just clean everything, but then within a day, you look around and it's like, I can't live this way. And so that's what it's like in my world right now.
Yeah.
And that's really rough. And you can't, it's better if you can open windows when you're in that mood and just be like, well, there's still a world out there. But in the winter, you can't. So it's like, this is the world and it's gross.
Yeah. We are getting into this. I mean, it usually doesn't happen until like March, but the zone where like you just keep being like, I need new air. I've been breathing the same air and it's bad air. Yeah. I need new air, but you can't open the window.
Trapped like rats.
It's just happening a little early this year, which bodes well for us, I think.
Yeah, gonna feel great in 3 weeks.
Anne, how are you? You okay?
I'm actually okay, except it's my first week at a new contract, they're really nice. Like, I really like them, but it's just always exhausting. I was saying before we started, they keep introducing me at large group meetings where I'm not prepared for it. I'm like, oh, I have to go on camera and my hair looks bad and I'm not wearing, my clothes look bad too. Hi, everyone. Looking forward to working with you.
I wasn't expecting anyone to see me. Well, at least we had the world's most medium boring week of wrestling to keep us going through this long, cold January. And I'm not even saying that very meanly. It's like, you know, we say it all the time. There's 52 weeks in a year. Some of them are going to be duds, but this one was, I think it was kind of a, well, we had one super exciting thing, but then it's kind of some medium dud vibes. Do you think that's right?
Yeah. It was like, I wasn't mad about anything that happened. I saw some people very mad, and I was like, I wasn't mad. I wasn't, like, amped, but I wasn't mad. Sometimes it'd be like that.
I was shocked that you did make it through all of Dynamite.
I know.
I was so impressed. I didn't.
You didn't. You got close. You got really close.
I didn't think you were going to make it past nine, so...
I will, I mean, on this platform where I am compelled to tell the truth, I didn't see Mercedes's match because I went down.
Well, I didn't see it because I was bored, so.
Poor Mercedes's match didn't make the schedule because they didn't do any promos to set it up? Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't watch Collision, so I didn't see any on Dynamite.
Ann and I did watch Collision, but then I was startled by some things I read about it today, so I don't know how closely, I don't know what a good job we did watching it. We did accidentally watch it and catch our first segment here live. Yeah. Did I cut you off, Ann? Did you have something you were going to say?
Oh, I don't think so. It wasn't important, whatever it was. Oh, just that Leah told us right before Dynamite started that she was in her bed with her teeth brush and like mouth guard in. And it was like, okay, well, you're going to be asleep in 15 minutes, but she made it mostly through.
So there's a neighborhood bar that we used to go to all the time when my friends and I all lived in this one neighborhood. And it was our 9-year anniversary of finding this very towny dive bar. And so we were like, let's go. But like everybody had early stuff to do. So we got to the bar at like 4:30, which was like the strangest vibe because it was like, not even the townies were there, but it was like fine. Yeah. But then everyone was like, well, I have to go home soon. So let's have another drink quick. So I ended up slamming 3 beers so fast. And so then I was like, we went home and I was like, okay, I'm here for Dynamite, but I'm drunk. And I'm like, I just couldn't set myself up in the living room normally with my laptop. So I was like, I'm setting up for bed and what happens is what happens.
Were you watching on your phone?
No, I was watching on my TV.
Okay, that's good.
My bedroom TV, but I was talking to you guys on my phone, which a lot of times that's where either like by the time my clumsy hand fingers type a thought, we're already like 30 seconds ahead and I have to be like, is this thought worth saying? And sometimes it's not.
You know, but usually I think as a general rule, we should still just say them to each other. I mean, when our pants are off in our own living room, like just say it, you know, might be nothing, might be fun.
Nothing we say to live watch is that worth saying, really. No, so
it's true.
We're just reassuring each other that we're still there.
That's pretty much. Like, are you experiencing reality the same way that I am right now? Amazing. Let's just keep vibing. Okay, well, on that note, I guess you came here to listen to us talk about what we saw. So this week on Collision, Mariah May and Toni Storm had their in-ring face-to-face ahead of Grand Slam Australia. Mariah promoed on Toni, called her a joke, a meme, a dumb, easy pawn that she used to... you know, get the belt and that she took advantage of. And she promised to get off on humiliating Toni in her hometown. Extremely sexual stuff. Thank you, ladies. Toni hit Mariah after like a brief pause with a really excited, like, I'm your biggest fan. I look up to you so much. I can't believe this is happening. What an amazing opportunity. And she hugged Mariah. Mariah slapped her, hit her with the belt. There was a little bit of a beat down. And then she left the ring. And Toni was kneeling there in the ring, like bloodied. And then she raised the mic and said, "What makes you think I forgot?" I couldn't find the line that, like, now I've done a bad job of recapping because I couldn't find the line that that was, you know what I mean?
The
in
one
response
that.
To.
Oh, what that Mariah said?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't remember either. It was.
It wasn't in the AEW.com recap, guys. But anyway, but it was a real, oh my God, moment. Because she looked up and her face just transformed into timeless Toni.
Yeah.
Oh my God. She's an actor.
Yeah. And then she starts stripping off her clothes and... It's incredible.
And then
so glad we were watching this live because like not knowing it was coming, it was extremely thrilling. Yeah.
The odds of us actually seeing this live happen live were so low. It's astonishing that it happened. And we did flip out.
Yeah. It was so exciting.
the fact that she actually said it was the performance of a lifetime, yeah. I was like, I love her.
With the blood on her face and just like everything about her whole energy shifted. Like, again, it is, I'm just thinking about how now when we watch normal TV, I'll sometimes be like, that was some amazing face acting. And then be like, face acting is just acting, Allie. Like, I don't know why we made up the term face acting when we became wrestling fans.
I know, and we've like incepted a fair amount of people to just saying it like it's a normal word, but it's really not. I do think we're trying to distinguish between sort of the body acting that wrestlers do.
The day we start saying body acting when watching real TV is the day that we're going to need to have a serious
We should start saying that instead of selling. Yeah. Be like, yeah, he was, oh, great, yeah, then acting. He pretended to have a knee injury and his body acting was so good.
Yeah, immediately onboarding that, yeah.
Wrestling has made us so much stupider. I mean,
yeah,
it's like we enjoy ourselves, but at what cost? We're burning brain cells. I don't even know why I started talking about this. I guess just because I was being like, I think Toni Storm did good acting. And then just thinking like, yeah, and it's just called acting. It's acting. She just did like acting. It really wasn't face acting. It was like beautiful acting. Well, I loved it, guys.
And you forgot our favorite line, oh my which God, was that. Right. I'm going to put you back into my womb.
Yes. What did she said? She said, you may be the woman from hell, but you came from my womb and I'm going to shove you back up there. Cut from the AEW.com recap.
They didn't like the womb shoving part, but that was in many ways the most important part. Yeah.
So, my God.
She does amazing stuff. I love how much she just consistently says things that I feel like would make men very uncomfortable and often make commentary very uncomfortable. It's beautiful.
Which is how commentary should be a little more often than they are. Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to talk about the timing of this reveal? So feelings about like the reveal itself as a plot beat, but also having it happen now. How did you feel about it?
My only thing with this, it is... The thing is that it was perfect in that Toni made it perfect because like she was so good and so compelling and I enjoyed it so much. If I was running the zoo, I would have done this as a little bit more of like a plan. You know what I mean? Because like when you think about it, like you are like, well, what was her plan here? Because she revealed it after she got her butt kicked. But at the same time, I'm like, but I don't really care because it was like perfect. Like if she was a shitty actor, I think I would have been like more like, I think this was kind of silly, but she's such a good actor that I'm like, I don't know. It ruled. It completely ruled. I just think like, I don't know if her pretending to be Rock or Toni had lulled Mariah into some kind of concession and then Toni had pulled this, that would have been apex for me. Like that, I would have been like, that is my absolute perfect thing. But like, I'm not mad at it. And I think people on the internet were kind of mad at it and was like, I think it was stupid. And I was like, no, because she always had to do it now before Grand Slam because she had like, I don't think she should have gone into Grand Slam still pretending to be Rock or Toni.
Yeah. No. And I felt kind of the same way, whereas like I was absolutely delighted in the moment, like so psyched I didn't know it was coming. Like everything about how it was done was perfect. Then when people were mad about it, it was like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about the logical holes because I enjoyed myself so much. Of course there are a lot, but it's like so common in wrestling for people to do a plan with like basically no benefit. Like it's really not unusual.
It's the most common for sure.
Like, they're so often being like, hey, we're buddies, and then hitting them. And it's like, well, you could have just come out and hit him. I think it would have been the same. And it's like people often aren't mad at those ones. So I'm a little bit like, it's always funny what people get like hung up on. But I do think it would have been better for sure if she had like lulled Mariah into a false sense of security, or if it was like psychological warfare and maybe she'd done it a little bit closer to their match, especially if they'd done interviews where Mariah was like, oh, like Toni's so stupid, like she's had brain damage, like it's not gonna be hard to beat her, you know, and then Toni like really upset her right before the match or something. But like yeah, I don't really care, though.
I think if I had to do the psychosexual math, which I guess I do have to do, that's what we're doing here. We're doing the math. I do kind of think that, Mariah's vibe in her promo was, that a little bit she was like, I'm going to say all this stuff to you, and I want to see how you respond, and that she was kind of like, oh, and actually you are nothing to me. This will be so easy. And then she beat her up. I think she kind of did get lulled into a false sense of security. I know it's not perhaps the way that we're imagining it, but I did buy that she was leaving that interaction being any slight worries I may have had about this situation have been allayed. This will be so easy. Everything is fine. And then in that moment, Tony was like, it's actually the furthest thing from fine. So I kind of bought it as a wrestling plan. I was like, oh, that adds up to me. And I'd love to see Mariah lash out and kind of freak out about it for the next couple weeks. I think that's a benefit to doing it now.
If they follow up with Mariah flailing around, that will really work out. If it's just kind of in stasis for a couple weeks, it's less.
Yeah, I agree. If it turns out that Mariah gets destabilized and is freaking out, and Tony's like, I knew this would happen, then it's oh, that was her plan. And she used her knowledge of Mariah's psyche to get ahead. That will, I will fucking bop for it. But that would absolutely, I'd go back and be like, no, it was perfect choice. Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Kenny psychology textbook.gif. Well, we'll see what happens. We don't know yet what will happen. So we only can wait and find out. But it was extremely thrilling and delightful to watch in the moment. I thought they both did a great job. Their relationship is so juicy. Okay, girls.
Yeah. In the recap package, the commentator, or who, I don't even remember who said it, but they were like, oh, she gave her heart to a woman who used her. It was like, oh, my, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's
mm-hmm. A lot to unpack there. And they were, honestly, it was one of their most Will Hannibal dynamics. I'll say that. Because I have to. Anything else you want to say about Tony Mariah? No? Okay, girls, let's move on to Takeshita fought Katsuyori Shibata on last week's Collision and won. This was the main event. And we also won because we saw Takeshita's butt. And we had a little butt. We had a little butt flash. And, we like for that to happen sometimes. Just a fun little wrestling bonus. Did you guys enjoy your butt?
Once a year, someone should be required to show us their butt.
When are they going to pull down the front of someone's trunks? That's what I want.
Hey, we did see Pac's ball.
Oh, my God.
I forgot about that.
I'm shocked that there aren't more wardrobe malfunctions. I think I said this during the Brian Cage-Will Ospreay match this week, that I was just like, it's shocking to me that Brian Cage's panties, stay on his body for the whole match and, don't go anywhere. I'm interested in whether we're using any special glues or anything ever,
I was, something about his panties this week, I was like, those are a supportive undergarment. Those are keeping your lines smooth so that under a dress you don't have any lumps, you don't have any rolls. I'm like, that is a Spanx. That is good for him. That is supportive undergarment.
Some people really are coming out in saggy cotton, but not you, Brian Cage.
I really would love a wrestler to talk us through the gear situation and the gear underwear situation, because I'm interested.
How are we setting it up, setting ourselves up for success? You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. Yes.
It always cracks me up that the Bucks, no matter what gear changes they have, those pants are firmly belted to their waist. You ain't seeing butt.
He said, not today, girls.
Not today, perverts.
Well, good for you. About this, we respect you.
The Takeshita butt situation is then people pulled up the gifts of past butts we've seen.
Love now, was trying to remember all the butts we've seen. We saw OC's butt.
Little OC's butt.
Did we see JB's butt once?
I think we saw JB's butt.
I think we saw JB's butt once.
I think we saw Dax's butt.
We did see Dax's butt.
We didn't see this live, but we have seen footage of Kenny's butt and MJF's butt.
MJF's
from the indies.
What butt it's like that footage really feels like it shouldn't exist. When you watch it, you're just like, this isn't okay for me to watch. Wow, butts we've known. Okay. Also on Collision, we got a pre-tape of what Manolo called the Callis Family Supper, where we traveled to Don Callis's mansion in a snowy winter landscape. And he was hanging out there with all of his Callis family boys, who I've called here his merry band of dystopian cyber criminals and Brian Cage. And it is amazing to see them all at the table together, because even Lance Archer has his, like, you know, he's kind of like biker boy in space vibes. And mm-hmm. and then just like the Takeshita and Fletcher have their little glasses on. They're doing something cool.
And they're both wearing, like, Takeshita's got his leather jacket and Fletcher's wearing like a full suit. And then Brian Cage is sitting there in a t-shirt.
Looking like he just, he was going to go out for a run when Don Callis was like, we're having a family meeting. And he was like, oh, I guess, like, I can go for a run later. No big.
He didn't expect to be on camera. He didn't dress for the event.
No. It's like he got there and he's like, did he tell you to wear this? And they're just like, no, we just dressed. We just look cool, dude. And he was like, fuck me. Like, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like I can't do anything right around here.
He's like, in my last faction, we didn't have to do this kind of stuff.
It's like, if somebody told me we were being cyber criminals, I, of course, would have dressed like one.
Taz never told us what we had to wear. How do you guys know?
He's the Buddy Murphy of his faction. Like, I do believe that he's like, I could dress like a if you told me we're dressing like cyber criminals, I could do it. But then it's like, what would he come up with? Like, I'm just picturing him, like, looking at into his dresser, and he's just like, I don't know, I've got a pair of Ray-Bans. I could wear those. And it's just like, just because they're sunglasses doesn't mean that they fit the assignment, Brian.
But the thing is that, like, Brian Cage loves a costume, though, so I think actually if you gave him too much time, he'd be like, he'd look like Nero. You know what I mean? Like, he'd go too far the other way, and you're like, oh, God. It's not Halloween, Brian.
You're right. He would cosplay something, and it's like, you're supposed to make up your own character, Brian.
I'm like, just picturing him in the graphic for his match with Kenny, where they're, because of the machine thing, they were, like, both, like, Terminators, kind of, but he had, like, a belt with, like, four iPads on it, it looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's up to. Like, if you're like, yeah, we're cyber criminals, he's like, great, I'm duct taping iPads to my body.
Okay. Well, I'm not doing a full 180, because I don't think I was saying I didn't want this before, but now I really, really, really want kind of a challenge where it's like, Brian Cage, you must come to the Callis family supper dressed as a cyber criminal using only materials you find in Don Callis's mansion, and you have, like, it's like Taskmaster. It's like, you've got 15 minutes, go. Let's get that costume together.
Oh my God, if they filmed the 15 minutes like a task, that's excellent television.
I would give anything for a wrestling-based Taskmaster.
Yeah.
Oh my God, if you could do it, this should be someone's YouTube show, is it's just a little Taskmaster ripoff that you do every week at TV. Yeah. And so everyone is having to do all the tasks backstage.
Yes.
Dude. What is Brandon Easy Cutler money. Doing right now? He's covering Brandon time. Can't we get him to do that?
Brandon Cutler. Paid for nothing, Cutler. Get out Come there and take some footage.
Do some fun stuff.
In Jacksonville, they would have done that. They had so much time on their hands. They were throwing ketchup packets at little bowls.
I just thought you were going to say little boy. I was like, and what?
No, the BT belt. Come on.
I know. And my brain just filled it in, and I was like, what is she talking about?
You don't know that it didn't happen.
I've been watching too much SVU. That's on me. okay. So Don Callis told his family that they should be very worried about Kenny, who's come back extremely bloodthirsty. And he said that the Osprey Omega Alliance, quote, cannot be allowed to come to fruition, which was so Regency coded that immediately it was just like, Brian Cage is responding and I'm mentally inserting, like, but Papa, like, they love each other. But Papa,
we must not allow this marriage to happen.
Brian Cage was like, I don't think we have to be worried because there's like tons of us and only two of them. And Don Callis was like, A, never underestimate Kenny, the best of all my boys. I'm so sorry that I ever turned on him, frankly, when I look at you guys. B, who said there's only five of us? Dun-dun.
And there was there was a sixth plate made at the end of the table.
Yes. The table was set for another man. Who do you think it shall be?
Greggy. I want it to be Greggy.
Greggy?
Little Trent Peretta. But I'm afraid that it's going to be like Jerry Lawler, the king.
Yeah, Jerry Lawler is what you said in your notes. And I truly was like, and fucking spin and spin. With our luck, of course, Jerry Lawler would have slithered out of his WWE contract and he'd show up in the Callis family.
Good.
What did you think of the just the setting? Of this, did you like the Callis family mansion?
I loved it. I was obsessed with it. They did like an establishing shot of the house, and then inside there was like the oil painting of like Don Callis cradling Kenny's broken body, which is beautiful because it really suggests that the whole house is full of every oil painting he's ever commissioned. You know, like there's the one of shirtless him and Kenny with their jeans pulled low. You know, like
so I'd love classic oil paintings. I'd love a true Regency, like, portrait hall for Don Callis to have one where you go in and you can see them, like, running down either side. That's just, you know, for next time you're renting out a mansion. That's that's my dream.
I thought that mansion looked like... Do you remember that book series that was, like, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children?
Yeah, I never read it. Did you?
I didn't read it either.
What are you doing there? What was so peculiar about the children?
I think it's been a long time. I think that they had weird superpowers.
Well, not that peculiar in the world of YA lit. But they had a mansion like that?
Yeah, it was very... I think, like, Tim Burton did, like, a movie based on it. I mean, I don't know if it was good, but, like, it was that kind of aesthetic. I was obsessed with it. I was obsessed with all of the long shots of, like, this beautiful gothic mansion. Why are they here? How did they get access to this?
I liked it very much. Okay, so then as a follow-up, Ospreay fought Brian Cage on Dynamite, as referenced before. Poor Kenny had been assaulted and immobilized backstage before the match, so he was powerless to prevent Don Callis and Lance Archer from interfering to try and help Brian Cage win, but Ospreay still managed it. Any immediate thoughts on the match itself?
This match was super fun. I was like, we're seeing a lot of Brian Cage all of a sudden, but I'm not opposed to it. Like, there was the part where Ospreay jumped and Brian Cage just caught him, and then Ospreay was like sticking straight up and he just carried him around for like
that was amazing. And not to brag, but when I, having watched wrestling for many, many years, so thoughtfully and interestingly said, Will Ospreay is great at jumping, and Brian Cage is so good at catching. Didn't that impress you guys? You were like, wow, she knows how to talk about wrestling.
Yeah. I was
Get her on commentary.
Slow down with the technical lingo, Allie.
It looked insanely cool. And it was just the catch itself was like, wow, you caught him so firm. Like, it just really looked good. After Ospreay won, Lance Archer attacked him some more, and then Kenny ran out to help. So I guess he'd recovered from his vapors or whatever. And he and Ospreay ended up getting pummeled for quite a while because they didn't have any other friends to come rescue them from the entire Callis family. And then at the end of the segment, they're both, like, lying prone on the ground, and Ospreay just, like, wriggles over to Kenny and throws himself over Kenny's body protectively and, like, really, really protects him.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with it. Ospreay's like, now that I've got somebody in my foxhole, I'm gonna do everything. I'm going to do everything I can to protect him.
I'm going to be the best friend of all time now that I finally have a friend. Yeah, it was incredible. Like, other times you see people throw, you know, like Eddie throwing himself on Mox when the exploding... Yeah. Barbed wire didn't explode. Like, at least they had a long history, so you were like, yeah, I get it. But this one, you're like, oh, Ospreay loves him. He feels a passion that I did not anticipate.
a passion for having someone, at least. Like, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. it is like, he's like, I found myself somebody to love, and I'm never going to let him go. I'm never going to let him go now.
He's clinging to, like, a wire mother, basically.
Okay, Kenny is wire. I'm incapacitated.
I mean, Kenny's not the most nurturing environment, you know, but he can't help it.
Oh my god. Yeah, I really loved this. His body was so on Kenny's body.
Yeah.
It was like, you know,
just really what a man, on there. Yeah.
Like I put this little screen cap here, and it's like his head is like ducked a little. Like he is acting like he thinks something's going to explode nearby.
Yeah.
And he's like, Kenny, it's okay if I die, but they'll never get you.
You like, I heard in my mind's, like, in my mind palace, I don't know where I was going with that sentence, just Osprey being like, no, take me instead.
I volunteer as tribute.
Don't take great. The girl.
Did you guys notice/like my realization that because it's a Kenny tag team, and we'd already basically been saying it, Kenny's been in the Golden Lovers, he's been in the Golden Jets, and now he's in the Golden Retrievers. Not bad.
Not bad.
I don't think that one's going to make it to TV, but not bad.
On the other hand, you never know. Kenny, if you're listening.
It's not nothing. Kenny also continues to be in beautiful girl mode. Thoughts?
Mm. Oh my god, he's so cute now. Like, when he came running down to the ramp, I was like, oh my god. He's, like, unbearable right now.
It's, to get to see him explore a different mode, it's pretty exciting.
It's really lovely stuff, and the ponytail is really working for him, and it's so silly when he's fighting, but when he's not fighting, he is Christy Thomas, and it's Kenny's Crushers, I said. And he is really, he's doing what he has to do.
I started reading Pig City this week, Sixth Grade Secrets, and
how's it hold up?
It's pretty great, yeah. I'm like, if I was in sixth grade, I'd be pretty obsessed with this, yeah.
It's a pretty, Lewis Satcher really was quite the genius, it turns out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
extremely.
Has he ever, like, produced a dud? I feel like everything I've ever picked up from him, I enjoyed.
I think that's right. It's just like some stuff got bigger than other stuff, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. like, you know. So thank you, Pig City. Do you guys have any thoughts about the effectiveness of the kind of like runouts and stuff, or no? I think there was some, like, it was a little repetitive. Perhaps.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were pretty mad about the number of beatdowns. Like, to me, it was just kind of dull, you know, other than Osprey, like, climbing on top of Kenny. Like, I feel like that's more my objection to the beatdown type stuff. It's, like, just kind of not the most interesting thing they could be doing with this feud, but, like, also whatever.
I don't know what exactly is going on recently. I didn't really have an objection to this aside from the fact that, like, I think all night they were kind of running back beatdowns that we'd kind of seen. So, mm-hmm. you know, it was a little easy to kind of zone out and be like, okay, no new plot beats in wrestling this week. but something is going on with the beatdowns recently where it just feels like they feel less serious than they used to. And I don't know, from a technical standpoint, whether there is something they're doing differently that's making them feel that way, or if it's just that once you've watched wrestling for long enough, like, a beatdown's a beatdown. But I have more than usual, I feel like, been like, okay, yeah, I get it. You're beating him up. I don't think that anything else will come of this, so we can move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
All right. Well, speaking of repetitive beatdowns, let's move on to, my God, the number of people who are factored into this Death Riders section. And actually, it doesn't start with the Death Riders, so that wasn't a good transition. Nobody cares. On Dynamite, we got an early segment where Renee was standing by Swerve Strickland's dressing room door. She was hoping to get an interview about his feud with Ricochet. And Hangman barged past her right into the dressing room, looked around, said, well, he's not in there, and barged back past her again. And she was like, girl, what the fuck was that? What are you doing? And he said, none of your business, as he was checking another door. Like, this man's just cruising, you know. And then he barged into MJF by accident. They stared each other down for a minute. Hangman stomped off down the hallway, and we got an MJF promo where he was like, this is, he cut like a little promo where he was like distracted, kind of looking at Hangman and being like, this fucking guy just allowed to do anything he wants, stomps around, ever just gets away with it. And then everyone's mad at me. I don't understand it. And then he cut a promo about Jeff Jarrett that, I'll be honest, I couldn't really follow what was going on, but it was pretty short. So that's fine. Okay. Wow. Thoughts? And I have a lot. You guys go first. Thoughts on the segment?
Yeah. Should we start with the part where Hangman just feels pretty entitled to walk in and out of Swerve spaces, and that he's searching for him for some unknown purpose, which seems perhaps sexual in nature?
Well, that's a bold suggestion. I would never have said that, Anne, but just kidding. Of course, that's what we're all thinking.
Yeah, and I think Lizzie Flanagan on Twitter pointed out that, like, weirdly, his face wasn't, like, that bad. It was just sort of like, hey, I'm looking for Swerve. He left his lights on in the parking lot.
It was. His demeanor was so perfect. Perfect to me. Like, not perfect in the sense of, I don't know what it was supposed to communicate. But he just walked into the dressing room so confidently. And it was giving, like, I come here to, like, do sloppy makeouts with this guy all the time. Like, we just, like, yeah. I love, every week I love it. Like, I come, I barge in, he says, why don't you knock? We yell at each other, we make out really nasty against the mirror, and then I leave. Like, it's just, like, what I like to do. And when I barge in and he's not there, I don't like that as much.
And, of course, I don't even mind if anyone sees me barging in, because there's tons of people backstage. Renee's standing right there. Like, everyone knows we're doing the sloppy makeout. And just Renee, stop interrogating me about it. Like, what's the big deal?
It's like, Renee, you know why I'm here. Just buzz off. I'm here because I have an itch that only he can scratch. Okay, I don't want to talk about it on camera. What did you guys think about the MJF Hangman interaction?
I'm cautiously optimistic, because I am sick of not enjoying MJF, and so I'm like, it would be really nice to enjoy MJF, so hopefully that'll be good.
And honestly, like, this was the most I've enjoyed MJF in quite a while, because, like, not, it was short, which was very helpful, but then he was also, like, his whole vibe when he was like, oh, this guy, like, everybody loves him no matter what he does and whatever, it's like a little more, like, work shooty than I like, but the way, like, his delivery on it was, like, fairly kind of charming and, like, fun, and I was like, I don't hate this as a vibe, so, and it's like, I haven't enjoyed anything MJF has done in, like, a year and a half, but I used to enjoy him regularly, so it would be nice to, like, pull him out of his little death spiral.
I would love to be really into an MJF promo and not wincing when I hear his music.
Yeah.
But
since anyone in an MJF feud seems to get, like, multiple live segments a week, it's like, yeah, get Hangman in there.
Yeah, that would be great.
Prefer that to Jeff Jarrett. Yeah.
Let's do that. But yeah, I do think there is danger if MJF does the kind of promo that's like, well, here's the shoot things that, like, you get in terms of, like, fan appreciation, or, like, you know, like, a media appreciation, and I don't get any of those things, and it's gonna be like, okay, well, I don't know, this is, don't do
we
this
all
to me.
Don't get stuff, buddy, that's life. Yeah, I agree with that, but I did really like when MJF does stuff where he is not performing for the camera. Like, I liked for him to be kind of distracted looking at Hangman and saying stuff that he wasn't, like, performing for Renee. It was just like, I'm having a feeling that I don't like, and then being like, whatever, I'm not going to show that to you right now. I'm going to perform this other thing about Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
That is kind of, that's so much more interesting to me than some of the modes that he's been in the past year. So I'm optimistic about that. And I don't really understand yet, like, you know, none of us probably understand, like, where they might go with this, but I think it's fun to be, like, seeding it pretty lightly to start.
Right. Yeah. And I think, like, it's if MJF is in a mood where he wants to have a good feud, I mean, I think, like, Hangman is a very good partner for that. Like, I mean, like, Hangman's had so many rich feuds that if MJF is willing to play in this space, it really, like, it would be really good for him. But, like, you know, who knows with MJF, you know, it just, but I do feel optimistic. I'm like, come on, you're not going to waste your chance with Hangman, are you?
Yeah, this was definitely, like, better than I feared it would be off the bat. So I also feel, like, cautiously optimistic and like, oh, this could be fun, actually, especially with, like, the place they're both in. And I think MJF was a little more, I mean, it probably was the distracted vibe, but, like, a little more, like, vulnerable seeming, or just seeming not quite as, like, together and sort of fakey, polished as usual, which was a nice change of pace.
Yeah, I thought it was good. All right. Okay, so then... Oh, I just also wanted to say, though, that I liked that segment because I thought this was the most that a backstage segment has looked like it was taking place in a hallway of a high school in a while. And that's really my preferred. That's where, yeah, I think wrestlers should be hanging out, is, yeah, they should be in a hallway, yeah, that's mostly emptied out because they're supposed to be in homeroom, but they're not. And mm-hmm. Vice Principal Christopher Daniels is about to come yell at them about it.
Yeah.
That's there where they're supposed to be.
There was two extras, I don't know, right in the back of the shot having a very intense conversation. Yes. And then suddenly they both finished their conversation and walked away. And I was like, well done, extras. You did a good job.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit like, well, what are you guys talking about? Wait, can we get the camera up? Let's get the camera over there. This feels like they're cooking something.
Feels like a rich world back here. Yeah. And then, I mean, Renee's reactions are always great, but in this one, she was so fun too, where it was like, wait, what the hell is going on? Like, just that whenever you're annoying Renee, like, that's fun. And
yeah,
people are just trying really to nice. Do their jobs.
Okay. Also on Dynamite, Claudio fought Jeff Jarrett, and everybody in the Death Riders cheated to help him win, and he did win. And afterwards, Jeff Jarrett looked really astonished that Claudio had won, which I think is strange because I think he should have expected Claudio to win because Claudio is a really buff young man. I don't think Claudio is that young.
But no, I mean, Jeff Jarrett. Yeah. I don't think Jeff Jarrett has won very much in AEW. So I'm surprised that he thought that was a shoe-in for him.
Or in his entire career, we've been told. I mean, Anyway, but then MJF came out and he hit Jeff Jarrett with his Dynamite Diamond ring. And he said, Jeff, as you know, I truly respect my elders. And that's precisely why I'm not going to say I told you so. And I said to myself, I still don't really understand what their relationship is right now, to be honest. I don't know if they're feuding or if MJF is still trying to get a job for him. But Anne, would you like to lead us in a light segment about the Death Riders now?
Yeah, they had this close up with Renee thing, which I did actually watch all 20 minutes of tonight.
Oh my god, amazing.
And frankly, I loved it. If you're in the right frame of mind, it was high comedy because you had Renee giving this very she like talks above ground about how, like, obviously there's a conflict of interest because John Moxley's her husband. And then she opens, like, a full-on cellar door, walks down to the basement where everyone has an air of, like, basically, like, last days of Hitler's bunker kind of vibe. Like, she asks Yuta if he's happy, and he's like, I haven't thought about happiness in a long time. Claudio is standing so weird. It like really, and he's doing all the talking at first. And
he did a lot of talking.
Yeah, it was very like John is my king, and John's done everything for this company. It, like the cult vibes were like through the roof. It looked like Moxley had maybe put him in some really weird underwear, and he was standing weird because of it. And then Mox was very manic when he finally did talk, where I think I said his vibe was that he had done a bunch of cocaine and gone to the library. But it was like, yeah, Renee, 100%. Like, of course, blah, blah, blah. Like, he said, it's not, why do you need to see the belt? It's not a petting zoo.
Yeah. Amazing. What is this, a petting zoo? Sent me to the moon. Like, I was like, I don't fully understand what's going on here, but you are... you're mentally declining in kayfabe. Yeah. And I think there's something quite charming about that.
Yeah, it really was like, well, the Death Riders had big plans, and I think maybe they're actually in kayfabe not going the way they planned, but they're insisting that they are, and nothing's wrong on Team Taz. But, like, Mox is really on the edge, you know, which I don't know. I don't know that that was the intent, but it was delightful.
I think it's like when you describe it like that, it kind of does sound like it went perfectly. You know?
Yeah, I mean, oh, and Renee interviewed Pac, and he was, I guess it was a sauna, but it just looked like he was inside his underwater terrarium, which is extremely funny.
It's so funny to think about Pac being like, Mox is making me live on the land. He's like, so I just go in the sauna for moisture. I just go in there and I
get sprayed down.
I make steam in there, and I guess that's the best we're going to do. Very interesting. They showed just a little segment of this on Dynamite. Yeah, well, I don't know what the Death Riders are doing really, but then finally, Jay White fought Wheeler Yuta on Dynamite and won and beat him up a little extra. And Mox came out to distract Jay White, and then Claudio snuck up to kill Jay White. But then Adam Copeland and FTR came out to save Jay White, I guess, and Dax got his grubby little mitts on the mic. And when I saw that, I thought, why on earth would this happen to me? I'm a good person. But then he cut this little promo that started with him saying, what terminology did he use? He was like, I think the Death Riders, it's not that the Death Riders don't have some good points, and it's not that I don't respect their style. Something like that, where he basically was just like...
Yeah, I don't remember the exact words either, but it was like, of course I agree with what everything you want and everything you're doing, but you beat up an old man that I love, so
yeah,
I'm mad about that. Okay.
It's a really strange, strange way to start, because it's the second time at least that he's started a promo about the Death Riders this way, and it's like, I don't know, if you have to start every promo saying that you, like, agree with his cult ideology, whatever it is, like, just join his fucking cult already.
Well, there's something about it that is, like, sort of, like, well, of course I support the leopard eating faces party, and that's not going to bite me in the ass at all. You know what I mean? No. He's like, oh, you're all terrible people, and of course I love that, but I don't like that it's aimed at me. Can't you be terrible people at other people? And I'll support you in that, you know?
And his someone vibe did really have that. Is like the Nazis' most enthusiastic collaborator. You know, it's yeah. just like whoever's in power, I'll go belly up for no problem. And it's just like, Dax, do you have like the literal worst instincts of anyone at building a wrestling feud? Like,
yeah.
You're trying to get me to want the good guys to beat the bad guys, and you decide to have the good guys come out and say, like, of course I love everything you're doing out here. Like, keep it up, but just be nicer to the Rock and Roll Express and we'll have no beef. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. It was a really mysterious approach. I guess, like, at this point, I'm just like, I don't think Dax thinks that much about how to build feuds at all, is my impression.
Right. No.
But it's really a strange choice. And then, anyway, I guess he was like, oh, yeah. Okay. So he said, if you try to end a 67-year-old man, they're all telling us their ages these days, which is really funny.
I do think, didn't Dave Meltzer, he was like, guys used to lie about their ages. It's like, yeah, we should bring that back.
Says, when you try to end a 67-year-old man, my idol, Ricky Morton, that's when I've got a problem. So it really is just like, when it's personal, that's when I don't like it. Yeah. Lizzie Flanagan, I think, had a good tweet about this, where she was just like, this is fascism in America. And it's like, so true, babe. And so he said, Dennis Condrey is here. Don't know who that is. And in his name, on Collision, FTR versus the Death Riders in a Mid-South street fight. See y'all there. And so then I guess they're going to fight. I think I had something else to say, but I forgot it already. I don't know what it was, guys.
It was how excited you are for this huge Mid-South street fight.
Because as I know, you are a strong supporter of Mid-South street fights.
Just the Mid-South in general, of course. I don't know. I did say I looked up famous pairs of henchmen to try and compare FTR to, because I was like, they're so bumbling. Like, when they come out with Cope, it's just like, wow, you let your henchmen speak for you? That's so sad. Like, these guys. Anyway, I was looking up famous pairs of henchmen. I didn't find as many as I expected to, but now I do keep thinking about them as the Home Alone burglars. And that's pretty funny, actually.
That is funny. Yeah, but as the you say that bandits. With the henchmen speaking for them, it's like Draco Malfoy would never let Crab
No, no, no. It's like... It's yeah, it's like, do you respect yourself as an evil villain or not? I guess he thinks he's a good guy. Right, I'm remembering. Oh, Allie, you gotta get so that hard. In there. Yeah. So hard to jam that in there. All right, anything else to say about the Death Riders or any of the other million men who came up in this segment? Mm-mm. Yet? Okay. Renee interviewed Ricochet backstage on Dynamite, and she said that Swerve would have to forfeit next week's match versus Ricochet if he interfered with this week's Dynamite's Ricochet's match versus AR Fox. Really bad job. Really bad job, Ellie. Ah. Ricochet said he didn't want to get too deep into any kind of interview because look at how I'm dressed. What am I? Some kind of hoodlum? Can you guys describe how he was dressed?
It was like some kind of capelet, right?
Yeah. It's like on one side, a kind of a capelet on one side, but then like a fringe on the other. Mm. And I don't know what was going on downstairs.
I was so distracted by the capelet. That's really all I onboarded. But I loved it. I love everything Ricochet's doing.
His tone on that line was so perfect, too, where like I was like, what is this character? Because it was kind of like his tone in that moment was kind of like a gay Disney villain.
So any Disney villain? I truly, in many moments of this gimmick, I don't exactly know what he's going for, but I know that he's nailing it. You know, yeah. He's throwing much spaghetti at the wall, and I'm like, well, what can I say? The wall's covered in spaghetti. It's amazing.
Some of these people were watching or like barely even chucking peanuts at the wall. So I'm like, yeah, I'm enjoying the spaghetti.
Yeah, no, it's perfect.
Well, honestly, like Ricochet just shows like how much goodwill you can get from me by just humiliating yourself so thoroughly and so gleefully. You know, like if Dax had a fraction of that energy.
Oh, yeah.
Boy.
Can you believe that the first week that Ricochet did this, everyone was online yelling at him and being like, he just looked pathetic. It's so stupid. And I understand he wasn't doing like this then, but like he was on the road to this. Yeah. He understood like I must humiliate myself in order to endear myself to the girls.
Yeah. And mission accomplished.
Yeah. And it always cracks me up when the entire IWC gets like mad because they read like one person's opinion decided to support it, because it's how you like that week that Ricochet started doing this, I feel like I saw it 17,000 times, people using the word geek as a verb, and they're like in a weird way where they were like, Ricochet got geeked, he was just really, he just got really geeked, and I was like, what are we doing?
Wake up, sheeple. Have your own opinions.
You tell a man. Ricochet, this also was quite pathetic. He said, here at AEW, the powers that be are always bullying.
Okay, again, the intonation on that was so funny because it was a little indignant where he was like, and I'm always getting bullied by the powers that be. Okay, that's a fantastic tone to take, where you, and especially if he never names the pat, like it's not like a Tony thing. He's just like, they're out to get me. They're trying to take away my cape, and I can't.
It's so funny because Ricochet's first months, it was like, oh, I don't think he's funny at all. But now he's like going for it. It's like, I don't know what's happened, but amazing.
I don't know. He got a little fire lit under his butt, I guess. Like he's Ricochet. I love you. So then he went out and he fought AR Fox. This match was perfectly normal and fun. He won, and Swerve didn't interfere, but afterwards Swerve came out from under the ring and beat him up and chucked him around a little, and Swerve was wearing either an orange or a red t-shirt. There's simply no way. No. Just depends on what your TV or computer is showing you. And he looked really good in it. Either way, whatever color it was, he looked good.
I loved it, too, because no one had been able to find... Well, Hangman had not been able to find him earlier, and it's like... So in kayfabe, I think Swerve was under the ring the whole time.
The whole show,
poor Hangman was just... He needed a little release, needed some sloppy makeouts. Like, you gotta give someone a heads up before you go hide under the ring the whole show.
Yeah, it's like, just leave a little note next time. Like, I would have loved to be here to yell at and then kiss you, but... Unfortunately, I'm under the ring. Like, feel free to come find me there. That's a great plot beat that no one has ever done, is someone's like, you can come hang out with me under the ring, and then they just start making out and just they forget to come out. They forget to come out for their...
Miss their cue.
They miss their cue.
It's the end of the main event where it's like, hell, God, I gotta interfere with Ricochet. Is it Ricochet's match yet? And they're like... And then he rolls out, and it's just like guys like sweeping up confetti. Like everyone's gone home. No crowd.
It's like you air it. It's the post credits scene. Man, if we made wrestling really different, it would be a really different audience, but what a great show it would be.
Critically acclaimed, I think.
Yeah. Once we do our 30-minute wrestling situation comedy on HBO or any other prestige network, I think it'll kill.
Gas station.
And our
damn gas station.
And I don't
we
know why you're...
We already own a network. I'm so sorry.
Why? I don't know why you're looking for HBO dollars. We have all the dollars we could need in Wyoming.
I am just thinking now, I'm like, it's like they film wrestling every week anyway. It's like, so you have the sets. Like, why can't you just film one little sitcom? One little workplace comedy for us.
It'd be so funny if TBS was like, okay, we're going to produce our own scripted network sitcom, and we're going to partner you up with AEW. You're going to go on the road with them every week. I mean, I think that's synergy. I think that's corporate synergy.
I think it is. This is why we own a gas station TV network, because we have this kind of instinctive understanding of the biz.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's clear that our business instincts are impeccable.
Do you think anyone could put us in touch with David Zasloff? Is he still in power? I don't know what's going on. The upper echelons of WBD, but we've got they love to save money.
Mm-hmm. They love
this
to save
is a money. This is a money saver, I
and
think.
It directs some audience to AEW. You know, it's like when I was out on the West Coast, I saw my cousin for the first time in years, and my dad bragged to them that I had a podcast, which I would have preferred that he didn't do. I'm like, that's not a brag. That's humiliating.
Oh, no one needs to hear this.
And then I had to admit that it was about pro wrestling. But then it turns out my cousin watches some pro wrestling and got into it through Total Divas, which I knew the legend that women got into wrestling through Total Divas, but I didn't know in
that
reality.
It
was out there happening. Yeah,
yeah, it's out there happening. Wow.
And then she poured me some of the Bella Twins wine. I was like,
oh my God,
it.
How was and it?
It was good. Yeah, it was actually pretty good. Yeah, and my cousin works at a winery, and I was like, I kind of expected their wine to be repulsive. She was like, no, it's totally good. I was like, well, you wouldn't
okay.
know.
That is the third wrestler alcohol that we have consumed and had positive feelings about.
Yeah.
What was so we did Jericho's. What was
Brandy's
other...
wine?
Oh,
I had
right.
Brandy's wine.
You had Brandy's
oh,
wine.
Oh, yeah. I never had that one.
Wow.
Hey.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, what a world.
What a world. And then me and my cousin just talked about what a lovely person Brian Danielson seems like for a while. So it was a great evening for me.
He does. Horrible creative instincts, but seems like a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to our final topic of the night. Hobbs and Big Bill are in a fight right now. I have to be honest. I don't know why. And sometimes I just want to say, like, sometimes people will say, like, those girls are nice, but I wish they knew more. Like, they just don't seem to know that much. Like, they can't always understand what they're seeing on TV. And it's just like, it's actually not always that easy. It's like, if you have to show up every week to talk about what's going on and you see like, okay, this happened this week, but why is it happening? There's not a resource. There's actually not an easy resource to go to be like, oh, right, these are all the previous interactions. So there's only so much room in here. So that's just all I want to say is that like, you
and
are like...
And with wrestling, it's equally possible that like something happened in the 20 minutes of Collision that we missed, or... That
nothing
something
happened
and something we saw, or that nothing set it up at all.
Or that there's no explanation.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that because I just know there's someone out there right now, like, why doesn't she know why they're in a fight? And it's like, it's not like I didn't try to figure it out. Okay? Okay? Please.
Like, someone should have a site you could go to that just, like, explains when you're like, why Big Bill Hobbs fight?
And I know, it's like, Cage Match is almost there, but it's like, they should have a wiki, like, part of it
you
where
need?
They just like, you know how like you Google like Grey's Anatomy and it tells you episode by episode like the major plot points?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that would be useful.
You need
Who
the segments.
In, Mm-hmm. Who was in that 12-man tag that got everybody really angry?
Wasn't that Hobbs and Big Bill were both in that.
Oh.
Do you think it came out of that?
Oh my God. It's possible. Leah, you solved it. I mean, oh my God.
No, we have no one.
Were they
here
on the same side? Or the opposite?
I'm advancing a theory, but we have no.
No, I'm pretty sure they were both in it. I just don't know.
Is Hobbs in a faction right now, or is he just a Lone Ranger?
No, because he got mad because Don Callis didn't call him when he was injured. So
right,
he doesn't have a faction right now.
They were on opposite sides of that 12 man, so
that's got to be it.
Could be something.
Oh my God, Leah, you did
it! Out of your mind palace. Wow. I'm so impressed.
You did it. Did you even go into your mind palace, or did you find that through the window?
You're saying that, but I feel like people listening right now are going to be like, those idiots actually took place. they're fighting because of this other thing that you would know if you knew about Steamboat Willie from TNA.
That's probably right. The thing is, it's like, I don't need to know why it's actually happening. I just need to have a credible, I need to invent a reason that makes sense. And you've invented a reason that makes sense to me. I bet they just fought and they were mad at each other for reasons in the match. Like, Will Hobbs was like, I'm supposed to be the big man, and look how big you are. And then Big Bill was like, well, I'm called Big Bill, so I'm allowed to be the biggest man. And that's probably why they're fighting.
Yeah, makes sense. I bet there are a lot of fights backstage over who's the biggest, you know?
Yeah.
I bet they're always standing back to back out there.
Yeah. And just being like, measure me again. And it's like, you're the same, you're a full-grown man. You are the same height every week.
Was that, do you remember, oh my God, it was on, what's the Bunny's vlog where she was deliberately like ruining Danny Garcia's life by being like, I'm as tall as you. And he like kept getting madder and madder and being like, I'm a tall guy. I'm taller than you. And like, I think she ended up making somebody go back to back with him. And then when she finally admitted he was tall, he like exploded like Sonic the Hedgehog and was like bouncing off walls.
Is he tall though? He looks little.
He does look, I think, little.
He's gonna appear in your house and say, Ellie, I'm tall.
I don't have short boy vibes.
Okay, Danny, bring your own measuring tape, okay? You bring your own measuring tape. Well, okay, now that we know why this is happening, Hobbs attacked Big Bill in the parking lot at the beginning, towards the beginning of Dynamite, and Big Bill was looking so large, and he was wearing a little hoodie and a tiny little backpack. I think it was normal size, but just on him, it looked quite small, and I thought that was very sweet and charming. Mm-hmm. And they hit each other with some pans from Outdoor Catering, which I was also interested in. We got some great footage of catering this week.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Was it Emmy Sakura? It was Emmy.
I think it was. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What an absolute hero.
Yeah. Thank you. That's what people want to know.
And then later in the show, Big Bill came out to the ring. And, oh, this was all on Collision. No? Yeah. What did I say before? What show was this on? When did this happen? I have the information here. Allie, no, I don't. Huh.
I think this had to be in Collision because I don't
remember.
It was
on Collision. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry I said it was on Dynamite. Just don't, if you're fact-checking me, don't delete that message. It was on Collision. And they disrupted. Nope, that's sorry to say that. Allie, regroup. It's okay. It's okay. It's just your friends here, okay? You're fine. Big Bill came out to the ring, and he called Hobbs out, and they had this big unscheduled brawl, and Hobbs beat up a bunch of security guards, and he bled really nicely, and there was a little bit of a to-be-continued energy about this, because I actually thought they were, I thought they were still in the middle of the match, and then they cut to something else, and I was like, that's interesting, they've never done that before in the middle of a match, but then it's like, it wasn't a match, and it was over. But in my defense, it was a Saturday night, so what did you expect from me? All right. So then on Dynamite, Jericho promoted his new horror movie, Dark Match, put a pin in that, and cut a New York Minute segment in which Big Bill was like, I feel like I'm really growing as a man in the learning tree, and I really understand your wisdoms the way I never used to. And Jericho was like, I'm so proud of you. You didn't really kill Will Hobbs, which I kind of would have thought that you would have. So I assume that you'll do that next time you fight. And then he said, bye, guys, smiling really big. And the camera stayed on him for a really long moment while he was smiling. And then you saw his smile slip off his face right before they cut away, which I assume is significant and I liked very much.
I love it. And they've been doing a little bit of growing tension where he's kind of scolding Big Bill and Big Bill's kind of like, oh, which is my favorite thing when they do like intra-faction tension and yeah. like build it for a few mm-hmm. weeks of like someone just being kind of mean and then it like, you know,
yeah,
so everything's fine on Team Taz. It's really one of my favorite wrestling story beats.
Yeah. When you do it good, it's good.
And we talked about this in our group chat, but like the internet being like, Bill must be allowed to go solo. He has to be freed. And it's like, okay, he was a little egg and Jericho yeah. sat on him and waited until he hatched. Carefully. And then he's fed him carefully, nurtured him to the edge of the nest. And now he's going to fly for the first time. And people are like, why didn't Jericho just push him out of the nest before he was ready? Well, he wasn't ready.
Why was he ever in the nest? Because why was Jericho he in the nest? Gave birth to him. Okay. Think with your brains, dummies.
Jericho's guiding almost, him.
Yeah, and Jericho almost always sets people up better than he left them, and yet everyone's always mad at him.
Yeah.
It's like funny because it kind of, I think it sometimes it works to people's benefits that people, I mean wrestlers' benefits, that people will be so mad at Chris Jericho that they're like, get Big Bill away from him so he can succeed bigger than he ever has away from Chris Jericho. And it's like, Big Bill is great, but you really have to acknowledge that this gimmick has been good for him.
Yeah, right, yeah. right, yeah. right. We can also, I have to give credit to Brian Keith in that segment because he absolutely did make me fucking lose it when Jericho was like, and the Outrunners say that they've been in the business for years and years, and deadpan Brian Keith just goes, Mandela effect.
Brian Keith is such a quiet crack up sometimes.
Yeah. yeah.
Wow. Okay, let's circle back to Dark Match. Yes. Who's excited for Dark Match?
Oh yeah.
So psyched. Watch the whole trailer and it looks pretty good.
Yeah. It looks bad but good. You know, it's like just like, wow, this is about to be pretty insane. Should we watch that?
Oh, we should group watch it.
Yeah,
for sure.
We should group watch it.
I think so. Yeah. It's kind of a great premise where it's like someone books a bunch of indie wrestlers so they all get in a van and drive to a remote location for people they don't know. It's like, yeah, they would definitely do that and for not very much money.
I know.
From it's what kind of, I understand, it's really easy to get wrestlers to show up somewhere.
When you hear the premise, you're kind of like, wow, it's amazing that more wrestlers haven't been murdered by wrestling cults.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe they're making it out alive. But then too dark. Okay. I can't wait to watch Dark Match with you girls.
Yeah.
And then I think the only other thing I have here is that Big Bill has this Too Much Man shirt.
It's so funny to just see a very large man wearing a shirt that says Too Much Man. It's just like, yeah, I mean, yeah.
you are, yes.
I always love those kind of shirts because I'm like, who do you see purchasing that and wearing it?
It's like the same as Anna Jay's like fat ass bad attitude.
Yeah.
Theoretically, I think it's quite fun. It won't be going on my body, but
yeah. I mean, Jeff Jarrett just came out with one that just says one hit wonder. And it's like, again, are you wearing that to Target?
Oh my goodness. Okay, guys, was there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't talk about?
No.
No.
Just a quiet little filler episode.
I just realized that I said we would play a game, but then I didn't really plan the game. And that's we can if you want to, but we don't have to. We can do anything.
Yeah.
It's been a full episode, really.
It's been a full episode. It's just a sleepy little week for sleepy little girls.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll play a game for you guys another time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. This little podcast crew, if you can see all our faces, everyone looks so sleepy and lazy.
I actually brushed my teeth and I'm wearing my night guard right now.
You slam three beers before the episode.
Do that one week and let's just see what the vibe is, you know?
Yeah, why not, you know? We've been in the game long enough.
I always enjoy you, Leah.
Thank you. That's very nice. That's a nice thing to say.
Except for right before we started this episode when you were being a little less enjoyable.
I was getting some feedback, some constructive feedback.
I didn't see you taking immediate action on it, but I guess there's always tomorrow.
I tried changing my tone.
Yeah. All right. On that slightly contentious note, I've been Allie.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah.
This is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Twitch at Tunnel Talk Pod via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. We have merch now. You can find it at chop-tees.com. You can find us on our feed. You can find us on the Social Suplex Network feed, along with a ton of other great podcasts on the network. And you can find us on the Social Suplex Network Discord. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Stay frosty, please. And as always, come back next week.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.